This is take number five, the morning of January 6, 1961. President, would you go on answering Dave's question about the type that Lincoln was and characterize him?
Well, we were saying that Lincoln was just himself. He was a man who didn't believe in putting on a front. He always appeared as Abraham Lincoln, and he always appeared as the President of the United States who was in charge of things. And that's the sort of a man that I admire. And nothing in the world that I dislike more than a stuffed shirt who tries to put on a front and show that he's something that he isn't. Stuffed shirts always have the pin stuck in the shirt, and the wind comes out, and then you find out that he's a counterfeit. There's nothing in the world that I dislike more than a counterfeit. I want a man to be what he is. And if he isn't, he's a counterfeit.
Now, you don't think that Lincoln was taking a studied, kind of an eccentric approach to his public appearances?
No, I don't. I think he was just Abraham Lincoln all the time, public and private. And that's what a man ought to be, making a difference where he is, whether he's President of the United States or the king of a great country. If he's himself, he'd be all right. The King George the VI was that sort of a man. He was just honest, straightforward, public servant. And doesn't make any difference what position he may hold. If he's that kind of a man, he won't have any trouble.
Well, Mr. President, this leads me to ask this question. Now, what about the role of personality in leadership? We've had various types as presidents of the United States.
Well, a fellow's got to have something that will convince people that he means what he says, and that his acts are in conformity with what he says. And that's about all there is to it. You can have people who talk one way at one time and act another way. You can have people who pretend that they're not what they are. But in the long run, people always catch up with them. A fellow's got to be himself. And he doesn't have to be a stuffed shirt to do it. He's got to be just what he is, and that's what Lincoln was.
But the personality does help a leader or a president, doesn't it? In that light, tall men like Washington and Lincoln had certain advantages which came from their height, or don't you think so?
No, I don't think so. I think their leadership came from what was inside of them. And it, of course, a wonderful appearance of a public leader is a great asset if he has behind that public appearance something to go with it. Otherwise, it isn't worth anything.
And by that, you mean qualifications.
That's right. He's got to have the qualifications to do the job that he's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. He's got to be honest, and particularly, he's got to be intellectually honest. And if he isn't, that doesn't make any difference what kind of appearance he makes. In the long run, it doesn't amount to anything.
Well, there was a great deal of tongue-wagging about his appearance, and there were a great many...
About Lincoln's appearance.
About every newspaper contained some slurring comment about his total disregard of even the elementary needs for appearing in decent attire in public.
Well, I think he had decent attire. When the newspapers are against a public man, it's an asset in most instances, because in the long run, it will be shown that they had a prejudice which could not be cured. They never bothered me when I was in public office, and they don't bother any other public man who wants to do the right thing. He goes ahead and does it regardless of what the newspapers may say about his personal appearance or anything else. And I never cared anything about what they said about me as long as it didn't jump on my family, and then they got in trouble.
Well, but Lincoln, having achieved the stature, the greatness, not only in our own history, but in the history of all time, seems to be an extraordinary example of a man who was totally oblivious of immediate opinion.
That's the way the public servant ought to be. He wants to make up his mind from the information that he has on what's right, not pay any attention to what the propaganda sheets may have to say about it.
Well, and yet he was able to, with this terrible burden of being accused of being illiterate
and everything else,
and all the things that snobs and people of self-assumed culture will say about a man of simplicity and directness, yet he was able to lead people's opinion world opinion to a very large degree, but also was able to overcome a very hostile Congress. Now, how did he do that?
Just because he was right. And he knew he was right. He knew how to put it over. And he was never above talking to anybody, friend or enemy, on any subject that he thought was of public interest.
All right. How does a president know when he's right?
He has to make up his own mind on that. If he thinks he's right, then he can go ahead. He can't have anybody else tell him what's right. He's got to have the facts before him and then make up his own mind and do what he thinks is right. And if he doesn't believe in what he's trying to do, there's no use trying to do it.
Well, you just said an important thing, that he was willing to talk to anybody, friend or foe.
That's correct. He was.
To make his point or to try to understand what's going on.
That's correct. That's
and you think that's very essential in a leader.
That's what a public man has to do. He has to talk to everybody and listen to what everybody has to say. And when he has the information himself, he's got to make up his own mind. And of course, those that don't agree with him will throw bricks at him and rotten eggs and everything else. But then that doesn't make any difference. If he himself is assured that what he's trying to do is right, then all he has to do is to go ahead and try to put over, and that's what Lincoln did.
In other words, you think that was one of the great points of strength of Lincoln, his willingness to talk to everybody.
I think it was. Yet that's true of all the great men of our history.
Yet he seemed to be unmindful of his friends. He had formed no very close friendships in which he persisted in his administration of the presidency. And at the same time, he seemed to be totally unmindful of his enemies.
Well, that's the proper thing. He was not unmindful of his enemies. He listened to them, and he didn't care what they did as long as he thought he was right.
Well, now, is this something that you are born with, or is something that you managed to acquire as you aspire to the presidency?
Well, most men don't aspire to the presidency. It comes to them by accident. And the situation you're talking about comes about from experience and nothing else.
Well, he did aspire to the presidency.
Not until he was a prospective nominee at the Chicago Convention. Before that, I don't think he ever had it in mind.
Well, didn't Mary Todd help a little with
that? He wanted to be senator from Illinois, worst thing he ever wanted in his life, and he was defeated. And when this opportunity came along to be nominated by the minority party, he set up an organization and got himself nominated. And that, I think, was the principal approach that he had to the thing. I don't think he ever had in his own mind an ambition that he would ever be president of the United States any more than I did. I never thought I'd be president, never wanted to be, to tell you the honest truth.
Well, that's very interesting about Lincoln, if we may get back to your feeling about things. You don't think that Lincoln ever then thought of and schemed for the presidency?
Not until after the opportunity came for him to be nominated in Chicago. I don't think he ever had that in his mind at all.
Don't think he ever had it consciously in his mind when he entered politics or was interested in politics?
No. He wanted to be congressman. He was defeated after he served one term. He wanted to be senator, and Stephen A. Douglas leading for the Senate. And then when the opportunity came along to set up an organization and get himself nominated for president, I don't think he even thought he was going to be elected. But he wanted to be nominated because it was an honor, even if he was defeated.
You think it is an honor to run for the presidency, even if you are defeated?
Well, yes, sure. The places in history of a great many men are those who were defeated for the presidency. And you can name them right down the line. Some of them are very great men.
Could you name a few, Mr. President?
Well, I can name the man who was defeated by Rutherford B. Hayes in 1876.
You were talking, Mr. President, about the man defeated by Rutherford B. Hayes.
Tilden was defeated by Hayes and became a very great man because he didn't involve the country in war again in order to be elected. And there were other men who were defeated in the same way, take James C. Blaine. I think he was defeated twice for the presidency and afterwards became Secretary of State in the cabinet of Benjamin Harrison. You take Hughes, who was defeated for the presidency and became Chief Justice of the United States. William Howard Taft was defeated for re-election and became Chief Justice of the United States. Oh, a great many of those men, and we could name more if we had time to go over the history of the country, who were not elected to the presidency, who afterwards became great public servants and citizens of the United States who made a contribution to the welfare of the country.
Well, now, then, in the sense you don't feel that they are rejected, they just are...
They're just defeated because they couldn't get votes enough, that's all. It's not a case of rejection. It's just like running for any other office. When you're defeated, it doesn't mean you're rejected. A great many defeated men have gone ahead and been elected to something else after that.
By the word rejected, you mean that doesn't necessarily mean that they're critical of your character.
Not at all. Not at all.
Because that expresses a preference, but not necessarily.
That's right. As the examples I've named have shown, when they were passed on, they were highly thought of and were great men. They had a great many like that. You take the Adams family after John Quincy passed on. There were Adamses who were in Lincoln's cabinet. They wrote histories and everything of that kind. And you find, if you go right straight through, even in states with the governors, you find some of the great men of the states are governors who've been defeated. Men who ran for governor and were defeated. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're rejected by the public. If they don't become pessimists and lay down and take it and get up and start over again, why, they don't have any trouble.
In other words, those who also ran make a contribution to American life.
No question about that, because that's the principle on which our government is founded. Yeah, and a defeated man is one who can take it and like it. My favorite story is about Francis Marion Cockrell, who was a major general in the Civil War in command of the Missouri Brigades at Vicksburg. When he came back home, and after the Reconstruction had fixed it so people could run for office, he wanted to be governor, I think, in 1872. He was defeated by one vote by the convention. He stood out in the middle of the aisle in the old Capitol building at Jefferson City, Missouri, and threw his old black hat up to the dome and said, "I'm for the ticket." In 1876, he was elected by the legislature of Missouri to the United States Senate and stayed there 30 years.
Now, to what extent...
He was defeated for governor, you understand?
To what extent does a president's... this is to get a little personal. Does a president's home environment contribute to his function as president? Because Lincoln's is a case in point.
It has everything in the world to do with. He has a very pleasant and successful home life. It makes it much easier for him to do his job.
Well, wasn't Lincoln's rather unfortunate domestic situation a source of
I don't think it was unfortunate at all. I think he was married to a woman who was sometimes publicly indiscreet. And you find a new book that's just come out on Lincoln's wife. She was one of the most mistreated women who was ever in the public eye and was carried on by a mean Republican radical press who didn't like Lincoln. And it was
actually
just too bad. Some of them would have been shot. If old Jackson had been president, he would have shot some of them.
I'm sorry, this is the end of tape 5, the morning of January 6, 1961. This is tape 6, the morning of January 6, 1961. You were talking about Lincoln.
The published reports about the purport to give the facts about the relationship between Abraham Lincoln and his wife, Anna Todd.
I never believed most of them. Because I think Lincoln was a sort of a fellow. When he entered into the most sacred contract that a man can make, and that's the marriage contract, was one who stayed by that contract until the end and would have stayed to the end had he lived. And I think one of the difficulties that have come about as a result of the newspaper publicity was the misrepresentation of Mrs. Lincoln. There's a new book out on Mrs. Lincoln, which is kind and careful in outlining the history of the situation. And I think if you read that, you find that there wasn't anything wrong with Mrs. Lincoln at all. She's like a lot of other wives. She didn't understand what the limelight in the White House meant. And there have been a great many of them just exactly like that, and that's no reflection on them at all.
Well, some of the reports about that relationship would seem to indicate that he was not exactly attracted to her at the beginning, and that he didn't show up at the first appointed day of the wedding, and he ran out on it. And it took a little while to bring him back to the thing, and he was supposed to have written to a friend of his, quote, "I feel as if I'm being led to the slaughter," unquote.
Well, I have read those things, and I think that if he had had his way, and it's too bad that his son, who destroyed a lot of his papers, didn't destroy that one.
Well, the thing that we were trying to evolve here is whether this much maligned and much abused wife of Lincoln wasn't really the source of stimulation to him in urging him on to seek the presidency, as you may.
Well, I don't think she had anything to do with urging him on to seek the presidency. But I think she had a great deal to do with his urging him to keep it after he had it. And I think that she was very well satisfied and very happy in the White House, in spite of what the Chicago Tribune, the New York Tribune, and the Herald in New York had to say about her. And it gives me a pain in the neck when the women in a public man's family are attacked. I don't have any sympathy with the people who do that, no matter how bad or how good they are.
Well, can you explain why, Mr. President? I'll act as a devil's advocate here now and ask that question.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because I was raised in a long line family who set their women, their wives, and their sisters, their aunts and their cousins who were feminine, on a pedestal. And it was not considered proper to attack them. And it was in the same class with the viewpoint of Andrew Jackson. When any of his family was attacked, it was a shoot the fairer. And if he didn't, the fairer. If he didn't find her and his wife, and he was always sorry he didn't kill Henry Clay for the same purpose.
Well, Mr. President, still acting as the devil's advocate, is that a good philosophy?
Yes, it is.
Good philosophy?
Yes, it is.
Good philosophy?
Yes, it is. Women in under our program are those who maintain the money. And when you take them down off the pedestal, 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 they become common ever, then they're gone. I want my women to be ideal, and they are.
In other words, they help also to maintain the moral life.
They maintain the moral. They maintain the moral. They're invaluable because their judgment is always correct when it comes to the social operation of the White House or the home or anywhere else.
In other words, you don't want them to have equal rights, you want them to have more.
That's right, I want them to have more than equal rights. And they have in my family.
Mr. President, I gather.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. Well, you know,
this part of Lincoln so blurred the image of him in terms of the contradiction that seems to evolve there. On the one side, he was a man who was very much romantically inclined, just as Woodrow Wilson was. And on the other side, they're trying to portray him as a man who was rather beastly in his behavior towards his wife, and was indifferent to her publicly, and never said it publicly, never said it to.
I think if we had the documents that were destroyed, but that you were entirely wrong on the subject. Look, the character of Miss Lincoln was assassinated after Lincoln died. And it's just too bad that that had to take place. And it's just too bad that that had to take place, because I don't believe a word of it. And a friendly woman has written a book about her, which I think covers the situation in very good form.
Well, then the point you make is that all the reports on which so-called historic analyses are based, as they would tend to describe the relationship between Lincoln and his wife, are another source of either falsification or inaccuracy. Rather than a statement of the fact, as you would understand him.
I think that's correct.
So as you read Lincoln yourself, as a person and as a man of greatness, there was nothing in the record that would justify that description.
No, I'm sure of that.
In other words,
I'm sure of that.
In other words, he didn't have that mean streak.
No.
Mean streak.
No.
And in other words, Mr. President, assuming all this gossip was correct, you feel is diametrically opposed to his real character, what difference did that make anyway, so far as he was as president and that man?
Make a particle, because he didn't pay attention to it. Didn't make a particle of difference. You can't pay any attention to things of that kind when you're in a position where you have to run a country as big as this one.
I'm not talking about paying attention to the slander, but even if he was that type of mean man, as the gossip is made out, what had that to do, even if he was? What had that to do with
it? I don't admit in the first place that he was. I don't think if he had been, it would have made any difference.
You also insist that it couldn't have been the Lincoln as you understand him in that role.
Not.
So when we look at the this problem that they seem to lay so much stress on of his personal behavior, going into periods of melancholy, you attribute that mostly to the man's preoccupation with the problems of the office rather than a personal behavior pattern.
No question about that is the reason. No question about that is the reason, because his personal behavior with his family was always one of making them as happy as he possibly could. All his children were just as crazy about him as they could be. Of course, his son who survived him finally became an economic royalist and I think became ashamed of his father's background, just as Millard Fillmore's son did. And they destroyed the papers that would give us the very information that you're now trying to get at through me, about which I know very little.
Well, just as you reconstruct some things from the past out of some slender but very definite facts, you feel that, as you've just said, you feel very strongly that because he was such a kind man and most other things, he couldn't have been all this that the gossip about.
No, I'm sure of that. I'm sure of that.
And you're also saying, if we can deduce from what you've just said, that the presidency is such an enormously burdensome, there is no room for petty little odd problems of that kind.
Not at all. No chance for things of that kind come into a man's mind when he has the burden of the greatest responsibility in the history of the world.
And what you're saying also in effect is that the tongue-wagging gossips and snobs of that period were reading something into him that was absolutely untrue.
Famous people, despite the burdens of what they had, did have certain mischievous traits or had certain mischievous feelings. Roman and Greek history,
Let's get back to the presidency. Yes, that's true.
That's true also in some instances in the presidency, but then
And you feel very strongly then about Lyons and Lincoln not being and Lincoln what he was supposed to
be. I'm absolutely sure of it.
To carry former religion. He was either being an agnostic or a total atheist, that he didn't study the Bible and a code of his own into a religion.
The church had the only door to heaven. And Thomas Jefferson had exactly the same opinion, and accused them both of being atheists, and neither agreed what they had to say on the subject.
Would you classify yourself, President, who thought there were other doors to heaven besides former religion?
I always thought there were plenty of doors to have a single one, although I thought the Baptist was most likely to get there.
Well, I think on that note, we will end the morning session and we'll go on to the next session and we'll go on to the
This is the end of tape 6 of the morning of 61.